Stephanie Land never planned to scrub other people's toilets for a living. At 28, she had dreams of attending the University of Montana's creative writing program, traveling, and building a meaningful career. Instead, an unplanned pregnancy with a volatile partner named Jamie redirected her life's trajectory. After fleeing an abusive relationship with her infant daughter, Mia, Land found herself in a homeless shelter with just one bag of belongings and a basket of toys. The shelter cabin where Mia took her first steps became a bittersweet milestone achievement mixed with the stark reality of their circumstances. When their shelter time expired, they moved to transitional housing that felt more like probation than assistance. Random inspections, urine tests, curfews, and intrusive financial reporting created an atmosphere as constant surveillance. Being poor seemed like punishment for the crime of lacking means to survive, Land observes, highlighting how America's safety net often feels designed to humiliate rather than help those in need. With minimum wage as her only option, Land joined Classic Clean, scrubbing floors and toilets in strangers' homes. The physical toll was immediate. Hunched over bathtubs, inhaling chemical cleaners that cause persistent respiratory problems. She nicknamed each home the Porn House, the Chef's House, the Sad House. At the Chef's House, she envied their beautiful view and kitchen overflowing with fancy foods while she rationed her own meals to ensure Mia had enough. Most revealing were glimpses into her clients' hidden lives, prescription bottles for depression, secret alcohol stashes, unopened shopping bags stuffed in closets. Despite their possessions, my clients didn't seem happier than me, Land reflects, noting how they worked long hours to pay for expensive items they rarely enjoyed. The invisibility of domestic workers becomes a recurring theme. Land moved through these homes like a ghost, pale from lack of sun, with dark circles under my eyes, expected to clean perfectly without being seen. Survival for Land and Mia meant navigating seven different government assistance programs with Byzantine rules. Food stamps, WIC checks, housing assistance, child care vouchers, Medicaid, and Pell grants formed a patchwork that still left her with less than $10 in her bank account most days. The stigma attached to these programs created an additional psychological burden. Land describes the humiliation of using WIC coupons at grocery stores, facing disapproving looks from cashiers and customers. During one incident, when a cashier refused her WIC coupon for organic milk, she stood firm and asked for a manager. After he approved her purchase, an elderly man behind her said sarcastically, "You're welcome," as if he'd personally paid for her groceries with his tax dollars. These encounters left emotional scars and made every shopping trip an exercise in maintaining dignity. The bureaucracy itself consumed valuable time, with Land spending hours at government offices proving her income was legitimate, often missing work she couldn't afford to lose. Poverty's physical toll marked Land's daily existence. Chronic illness from moldy apartments, back pain from cleaning work, and bone-deep exhaustion from balancing single parenthood with work and school. Land describes waiting with Mia at medical appointments for respiratory problems worsened by their living conditions. Without healthcare or sick days, minor ailments evolved into chronic conditions she worked through regardless. The emotional burden proved equally crushing. After a car accident that nearly killed them both, Land watched helplessly as their car, their survival lifeline, was towed away, her cleaning supplies scattered on the ground. The officer handed her a $70 ticket, coldly suggesting she could fight it in court when she asked about the financial impact. Most painful was the effect on her relationship with Mia, who sometimes raged during transitions between parents, screaming, "I hate you," and "I want you dead." Emotional outbursts from a child too young to understand her complex circumstances. Despite grinding challenges, Land discovered precious moments of dignity and connection that became lifelines of hope. At the Loving House, she witnessed an elderly husband tenderly caring for his wife with Parkinson's disease. The couple tipped generously and took genuine interest in Land's life. The relationship with Wendy, a client battling terminal cancer, proved especially transformative. Their shared lunches at Wendy's formal dining table became sacred rituals. It's good to use the fancy teacups while you still can, Wendy would insist. Her insistence on paying full rates, even during shared meals, your time is valuable, provided both financial support and validation of land's worth. Henry, a retired professor living alone, became another source of vital encouragement, declaring Land one of the hardest workers he'd ever encountered, directly contradicting the narrative that poverty stemmed from personal failing. Throughout her journey, education emerged as Land's potential pathway out of poverty, representing both practical advancement and personal redemption. Despite the seemingly impossible logistics of balancing work, single parenthood, and schooling, Land persisted with online college courses. This commitment required extraordinary sacrifice, staying up until 1 to 2 a.m. doing homework after Mia's bedtime and completing assignments in parking lots between cleaning jobs. Initially, Land pursued what seemed practical, community college classes for a paralegal career, while postponing her dream of becoming a writer. The narrative's turning point came through her domestic violence advocate, Christy, who suggested the University of Montana's creative writing program. Christy's powerful response, "It's not asking permission, you give notice of relocation," marked a fundamental shift in Land's perception of her own agency. The possibility became concrete when Land received modest financial support from the WISP program, $2,000 for fall and $1,000 for summer, allowing her to imagine a different future. Land's move to Missoula, Montana, marked both a geographical and psychological shift. She immediately connected with the place and its people, ukulele-playing women in flowing skirts, locals in Montana hats, people with visible tattoos and Chaco sandals, a stark contrast to her isolation in Washington. Land recalls hiking the M Trail with Mia, watching her daughter confidently run up the mountain. At the summit, as Mia raised her hands triumphantly, Land could see the campus where she'd eventually earn her English degree, symbolizing her journey from poverty to possibility. The move represented breaking cycles of dependency and abuse. Though Jamie disappeared afterward and Mia's behavior initially became challenging, they established new routines and support systems. Land found steady cleaning work, published her first piece in Mamalode magazine, and arranged for Mia to attend a movement-based preschool in exchange for cleaning the facility. For Land, success wasn't measured by wealth, but by finding her voice and purpose. Her journey from invisible maid to published author reminds us that dignity exists in every person, including those we might overlook. Her story demonstrates that individual resilience requires community resources and structural support to create pathways out of poverty. Behind every struggling person is a complex story of barriers overcome, with worth measured not by income, but by humanity.